I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
There, wrestling fans, it is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 65, and this time out, well, it's time to start WrestleMania season as we count down the days to the show of shows, the main event, the showcase of the Immortals. As all this month, we are reviewing WrestleMania, and by month, I mean at least three in the coming next 7 days, as I've been a little late getting started on this stuff. So, yeah, expect three episodes in the span of 7 days to come out at some point. But we start off, besides, of course, reviewing our 1998 Raw episode, the first Raw of March for 1998. And then we go back to 1991, towards the end of the golden era that was the WWF, the end of the Rock and Roll Wrestling Connection, the end of Rally When the Funny Characters, place where we can really point to as being the destruction of our childhood in some ways. I'm, of course, talking about, we go back to 1991 to watch WrestleMania 7, where Hulk Hogan faced Sergeant Slaughter for the pride of not only the United States, but for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. WrestleMania, I have fond childhood memories of watching. We'll see if they destroy them by the end of this. And no, I don't mean destroyed just because Hogan said a naughty word. I mean destroyed because I watch good wrestling now and it didn't age well. All that and more on this episode. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about because there could be some stuff we have to talk about preliminaries before we get into the review of WrestleMania 5. When we get to that part, of course, like I said, we have the Raw review of March 2nd, 1998 to go over. But I'll start off, before we go anywhere else, something I kind of wanted to talk about on this show. Because all this month I will be talking about, you know, of course, the build to WrestleMania. And I think the thing I want to talk about is I feel like I need to give this year's WrestleMania a pass, regardless of whether it's good or bad. I feel like I want to give it a pass for multiple reasons. The biggest, though, being it's very obvious that this WrestleMania is dealing with a very depleted roster. I think there were it's John Cena and Cesaro and some other wrestlers were there, like Seth Rollins. I firmly believe that Seth Rollins would still be champion right now, and that Seth Rollins would be facing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, without a doubt. If Rollins was there, and Triple H is only in there because Rollins is hurt. It just, to me, is very obvious. Like, I don't know who. Like, AJ versus Jericho. I firmly believe, I have this firmly strong belief, and maybe it wasn't a plan, but that if John Cena wasn't injured, he'd either be facing The Undertaker, or he'd be facing AJ Styles. It's just, I look at what's coming, and I'm not saying I'm not excited. I mean, I'm certainly excited to see a blow-off, hopefully, for Jericho and Styles, where Styles gets a WrestleMania win. It's just as the weeks go by, I get less and less excited for Shane McMahon versus Undertaker in Hell in a Cell. Yeah, I'm freaking just thinking about that. It's great to see him back. And yes, I know he does crazy shit that we always remember, but it's like, really? Really? And it's just very obvious that they basically were out of ideas on what to do with Undertaker. I mean, Sting recently announcing his retirement obviously mean that Sting was out of the picture. They obviously wanted to go with John Cena. Who else were they going to put? Were they going to go back to Bray Wyatt? They couldn't do that. They could go back to Brock Lesnar. There was really no one on the roster, and it just seemed like this would coincide with another storyline that they were going to start pushing. So, it just, the way the storyline's going, and the way it naturally has to happen, Shane has to win, but is it going to be a believable win is the question. And again, this goes to that point of, I feel like I have to give this WrestleMania pass, regardless of what I think of it. I mean, we'll criticize whether it was good or not, I certainly will. But at the same time, I think, we have to look like, there are things we already know. One, we know that WrestleMania is going to be TakeOver's bitch this year. And especially if you already know TakeOver's card, which is, let's just say, match of the night, which will be probably match of the year, Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor for the top, you know, Bayley versus Asuka for the women's title. American Alpha versus The Revival for the tag titles. Apollo Crews versus Elias Sampson. Austin Aries versus Baron Corbin. Top to bottom, that card is stacked! And yes, I understand it's stacked for wrestling fans, and it's going to be a lot more wrestling, but there's still storytelling within that wrestling, as NXT has proven. The more important issue is, can the matches that are part of the WrestleMania card stand up to the scrutiny of being on the show of shows? Now, there are a couple I think that will. Styles versus Jericho is one of them. It's looking more and more like it might just be, especially with Neville's injury, that it will be just Zayn and Owens for the Intercontinental title. That will. Ambrose versus Lesnar will, especially after Mick Foley gave Ambrose Barbie. And I certainly think Triple H and Roman Reigns will. I'm one of those people that I think a lot of people claim, and they have the right to, TWK, that I'm too soft on Roman Reigns, that I don't blame him enough. But I think too much blame goes his way anyways, because really, and I've heard people say this, well, really, we all know that it's the writers. Well, yeah, we know it's the writers, but we can't boo the writers, so we have to boo him because of that. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to be booing him because of writers' mistakes. And he had a great segment on Raw. He had a great promo, very short, sweet to the point, on SmackDown. You know, he's never going to be the guy who's going to be able to hold the mic and do a promo like John Cena can. And not that he should be. And I look at Roman Reigns as somebody like everybody thinks like, oh, if we just do what we did with The Rock, and which, yes, has also been done with other people, oh, it'll be a success. But there's no guarantee to that. You know, and lest we forget that when The Rock turned heel, he turned heel as part of a group that he could lean on and learn from. He had Ron Simmons there to teach him and to learn from as part of the Nation of Domination. We're talking about Roman Reigns just turning heel and being a single heel. So, yeah. I don't know if that would work so much. It's just, I don't want to say that I'm very disappointed about this WrestleMania, especially after last year's. Because again, last year didn't have a great build-up, but last year's WrestleMania turned out to be wonderful. A great surprise. And we all admitted it at the time, it was a great surprise. I'm actually going to rewatch it at some point this month. Probably before this year's WrestleMania. Or at least the weekend before. By weekend, I mean by on the weekend of WrestleMania, but sometime before, like the Saturday or whatever. The point being is, regardless of what happens, regardless of whether my excitement is high or low for this WrestleMania, WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, I know it's going to be a show. I hope they put on a good show, but I just can't find myself hating WWE if it turns out to be bad, because it's really, really obvious when you watch the product how depleted their roster is of the big main event guys. Like, I'm talking about established. Cesaro was established. Rollins was established. Cena, Orton are established. And they were people that they could rely on, and they don't have those people. And they're right now trying to find who can they rely on. They can rely on Ambrose, and I think they can rely on Reigns. But only time will tell. Certainly, I think the thing that's hurt the most, though, is writing. I think WWE, unfortunately, is one of those group of people there, or at least in their product, they like to plan things out in advance. And I know they say, well, it's always changing, Vince is always changing things. But I think Vince, in particular, this is Vince McMahon, he has what he wants to do well planned out in advance. And when something happens to force that change, he's not good at adjusting at it. I mean, that's the thing about the writing right now that I see with the product that really hurts it is it's not good at adjusting. Everybody sits there and says, why can't they plainly see that Ambrose should be in the title picture? But again, the way they're looking at it, the way the wrestling industry looks at it, like, it's not that the title isn't important, but he's in a just as equally important match where if he wins, he's a guaranteed made man if he beats Brock Lesnar when he's not supposed to, which I think he will. I guarantee you, after that, he will be in the title picture. So, yeah, I can't say that I'm very much excited for this year's WrestleMania. There are some things I'm looking at. A lot of them, like the wrestling fans that are looking at, like Zayn versus Owens, Styles versus Jericho. I'm much more looking towards TakeOver. But at the same point, I feel like I have to say out loud, I think we should all give WWE a pass for this year because of the depleted roster due to injuries. This WrestleMania can never be what it would have been if John Cena and Orton and Cesaro and Rollins weren't injured. Those are four big, huge stars that just can't be filled up by one person. But the bright side is they will all be back in time for SummerSlam. So I'm looking forward to SummerSlam this year being better than last year's. Well, I'll say it. But with that, I think it's time to move on. And so it's time to do our usual Raw flashback review, as we are reviewing every Raw in 1998. And it's time to go over the Raw that took place on March 2nd, 1998, from the Gunn Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. Take it on the road. And welcome back. And yeah, this Raw happened. It's hard to talk about this Raw as far as wrestling is going to be concerned, because there wasn't a lot of real wrestling. There weren't a lot of matches. Like, let's see, I think I can count them all in one hand. There was there's New Age versus DOA. There was The Rockers and Billy Windham. The NWA contingent versus Takemichi Inoku and the Headbangers. There was Steve Blackman versus Karma. There was supposed to be Kane versus Austin. That never happened, so I'm not going to count that. There was Mero versus Tom Barretti, which didn't amount to really much. So yeah, I could really only count four matches really happen. Oh, and Owen versus Mark Henry. Five matches total happened in an hour and a half. I guess not so bad, but I guess the point I'm making is, like, in outside maybe Owens and Henry, none of the matches were really good at all. And more of it was all to tell stories building up to WrestleMania. The night starts, which DX coming out and cutting a promo about making Mike Tyson supposed to be there that night, and offer he couldn't refuse. Of course, they also try to punk Austin. Austin comes out, drives him to the ring, then Kane comes out and challenges him to a match. And Austin's like, this is bullshit, I want to kick somebody's ass, and he's going to kick Kane's ass. That was a really good opening segment. Storylines as we go through. Really, the Mero match was really only there to further the story of the match that happened at Mania with him and Sable versus Goldust and Luna. Of course, Owen's match had interference from China, building towards his match with Triple H. Steve Blackman's match saw Ken Shamrock come out to rescue him from the Nation of Domination, who got themselves disqualified when they jumped him. That building, of course, Shamrock and The Rock's match. I guess the two big things that, though, really happened on this Raw, and they're really the only two things worth watching, again, and this is also why the opening segment's worth watching. There's really three segments. The opening segment, and then there's a middle segment that kicks off the second hour. And then, or at least I believe it, that kicks off the second hour. It's like, I believe it kicks off the second hour. And then the final segment of the night, which was supposed to be Kane versus Austin, but that never happened because DX jumps Austin. Now, like I said, the first segment was DX cutting a promo saying they're going to make Tyson an offer he can't refuse. I think you know what's coming. And that middle segment in the middle of the Raw is where Michaels and Tyson are facing. They're going to slug it out. And then Tyson rips the shirt off, and there's the Degeneration X shirt. And Mike Tyson has joined Degeneration X. And JR called it perfectly, by the way. Jim Ross was spot on with his calling. Overall, I thought the commentary was enjoyable throughout the night. Most of the matches ended in disqualifications. And they were really short. So, again, that's also why I can't really talk about the matches. And then the final segment was, again, like I said, DX jumps Austin as he's coming out. Joaquin doesn't have an opponent. Sides, they need to do something. Ask for the ring bell. Now, I don't know if this was staged or if it literally was a fan that Kane beat up. I imagine it was staged or else I probably would have found out about, be able to read about some lawsuit. So I guess it's, I want to say it's staged that this fan tried to jump Kane. He dragged him and like chokeslammed him. But then he grabbed the ring bell beller. The timekeeper, excuse me. From in the ring. It says, "We never got to do this a month. We never got to do this a month ago." This is the best pallbearer voice I can do. "We have to ring the bell for the Undertaker." And they ring the bell however many times supposed to ring the bell. To which then they proceed to chokeslam and tombstone the timekeeper. He's like, "I got one... Kane's got one tombstone left." And he calls out, "We need to go for the timekeeper again," when all of a sudden their gong starts hitting. And Paul Bearer's trying to like, he's not here, and all of a sudden lightning hits. Taker's on stage. Taker issuing the challenge to Kane for WrestleMania. To which he accepts, and that ends the show. And that's really it. There's really no wrestling to talk about. Because like I said, I mean, Owen Hart is like really the only one I can say is good because he was really the only good wrestler. But none of the matches really had any ending to it. It wasn't like anything that built them up as wrestlers. It was all storyline focus. Really, the only one that actually, I think, ended in a pin was Mero and Brennan. And even that, though, had interference by Luna, which allowed Mero to do a low blow, and then the TKO, which, of course, that caused Sable to come out and chase Luna and all that mess to happen. Which I do want to sit there and say this. One of the things I was looking forward, because I am somewhat of a red-blooded American male, and because I have heard so much about it and I wasn't there, was Sable as a powerhouse ratings-wise in 1998. And I go back to that the Monday Night Wars series on the network where they're talking about Sable. They're talking about the women and what the women did, and they're talking about Sable. And I want to say it was Kevin Sullivan saying, like, nobody wanted to be on the Sable segment because, you know, Sable would dominate the ratings. And I know why she dominated ratings, but in watching it, I also don't know why she was dominating the ratings. Look, I get it. I guess it's the ultimate proof that you put a hot blonde chick with big tits on the screen, men are going to watch that instead of Oily Men do a technical wrestling match. I guess. In that era, yes. At the same time, she doesn't really do anything. And I'm like, why were people excited to see her? Like, don't get me wrong. Bikini contest and there's actually some story she's wrestling, I could get. She ain't doing shit. I mean, and I think I've been fair on this, by the way, when I talk about bikini contests and stuff like that. Like, if there's a story behind it and there's a reason and it's telling a story, I'm all for it happening on Raw. I don't think there should be one every week just there to put, oh, look at hot babes. Like, yeah, I can go on the internet and see that. And I know the internet didn't really exist. Well, you know what? It did exist in 19... Hell, it exists in 1994, and I know this because I'm currently watching WrestleMania 13 for the next episode review, and they show Shawn Michaels on American Online trying to figure out the computer screen, because it's so hard to figure out. Anyways. So, yeah. There are some really good legendary story moments that happened on this episode, which Tyson joining DX, and Undertaker challenging Kane. The other thing I kind of also want to make mention of is, goddamn the signage. It was like a ocean of signs there. I almost couldn't see the ring in some shots because there were so many goddamn freaking signs. So, yeah, Cleveland, tone it down just a bit. So, that was Raw for two. I mean, oh, if I had to give a rating, 2.5 out of 5. And that's purely on the back of a couple of legendary moments with Tyson joining DX and Undertaker challenging Kane. Outside of that, there's really nothing to this Raw. And if it wasn't for those two moments, I would say skip it, honestly. Because nothing really happened. So, that is it for our review of the Raw from March 2nd, 1998. And I think it's time to go over our rundown as we prepare for WrestleMania 7, which took place on March 24th, 1991, at the Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena to an attendance of 16,158 in Los Angeles, California, with the main event being Hulk Hogan challenging Sergeant Slaughter for the World Heavyweight Championship. Your commentators are Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. Ladies and gentlemen, this is WrestleMania 7. Welcome back, and wow, we have a lot to talk about with WrestleMania 7. Before we actually get into reviewing the show itself, wow, where to start, honestly? Yeah, I know, this is just instilling confidence in what I thought of this show. I'm trying to figure out where to start. Do we start with size and scale, do I start with basically that this is the end of an era? And it was. I guess maybe I'll start with there, because it was the end of an era. Because, like, a lot of the tag teams that we'd see here would end up breaking up. And really, it would start to shift into what would be, definitely by the end of this year, a new era for WWE, and that really funky time frame where you saw WWE started to fall when... I guess you can say 91's part of it too, but 91... 92, 93, 94, but 95, 96, where it was just this... But with 91, 92, 93, I think it was really, really slow, and then that's why nobody panicked. But then it just, I think, picked up steam with 94 and 95 and 96 into 97. And it wasn't until the later half of 97 and the event of the Attitude Era that things started to turn around. And it was just, here with this first minute, it was really the end of these characters, which were starting to become a bit cheesy. And I say that of Hulk Hogan, of Sergeant Slaughter, of Macho Man, this time Macho King, Ultimate Warrior, Jake the Snake. And I hate saying that, because Sergeant Slaughter was such a great character during his heyday. Hogan was able to revive the character time and time again for good reason, because even though it was cheesy, once he rested it for a while, the time would come again where we needed a bit of good cheesy, just good guy fun, and he could revive it for that reason. It's a character that was able to stand the test of time. And that, but this was really the end of that fun-loving 80s era. Because as we entered the 90s, this was the time where that 90s grunge and 90 ideas, and I'm somebody who defends the ideas and the thought processes that we had in the 90s, sort of those dark ideas that one could say that the 90s was responsible for. But I'm not above saying that there were things that hurt because it forced things to evolve for the better, but it also kind of destroyed our childhoods. I won't deny that in some aspects. So really, this WrestleMania was the end of the era, because really this was, I think, the last I don't know if we can call it great yet. We'll wait for my review, but really, I would put this as the bookend. Like, if from WrestleMania 1 to WrestleMania 7, this was sort of that heyday of the golden age of WWF. WrestleMania 8 and 9, it's really in this middle spot, but I would put them with, along with saying that WrestleMania 8 to WrestleMania 13, I would say, being part of this, again, that downsize. And then, of course, WrestleMania 14, I would say, you know, WrestleMania 14 to WrestleMania 19 was, or I would say even say 18, was that attitudinal era WrestleManias that just had it grow and grow. And then you had the ruthless aggression that you could even say started in 19 and went through 24, and then 25, or even up to 25, you could say. And then from 26 onward, it's been the PG era, and so on and so on. Again, it's just like, how do you categorize, where do you place it, what's the time frame and everything? So this is really, to me, this WrestleMania is the end of an era. There is a kind of unfortunate thing we have to talk about with this WrestleMania as far as size and scale as well. And that is one thing I think that automatically hurts this WrestleMania right off the bat is its location. And I'm not saying that the Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena is a horrible venue, but it's not the venue they wanted. Now, there are two ideas to why they changed from where they wanted to go, which was the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, which would have been outside, to the sports arena. The two is that, according to WWF, there were security concerns in the wake of Sergeant Slaughter's portrayal, again, as the Iraqi sympathizer during, because this was all taking place during the Gulf War. Others say that the poor advance ticket sales had the company think that they would have difficulty filling the arena, so they moved it to a smaller venue. I more or rather actually believe Sergeant Slaughter, because if you watch The Legends of Wrestling, he talks about like the FBI coming to the WWF and seeing and talking with them about the, you know, what would they have to do to help make sure the venue stayed safe, because they were getting these threats. So I think while they may have had poor advance ticket sales, I think it more had to do with security concerns. Because, again, I believe Sergeant Slaughter. I have no reason not to believe him. Sergeant Slaughter's he's a real American hero, except at this time. But the reason I bring all this up is scale. You know, part of the reason the WrestleManias I talked about kind of hurt, the WrestleManias of 8 and onward, is they seemed smaller scaled as far as the venue. Even WrestleMania 9, yeah, outside at Caesar's Palace, but that just seemed like, because it seemed like they were just in grandstands and they were outside. It just seemed so small still. Madison Square Garden, great location, but still a very small venue, and so on and so on and so on. And even WrestleMania 13, which I'm watching, Rosemont Vermillion, which is a great place, but really, I think that sort of started to change it because of the scale, but that's, we'll save that for next week. The point I'm getting at is the smaller scale when compared to where they were before. And the year before, where were they? They were in the Toronto Sky Dome. Okay? And if you remember that WrestleMania, it's like they packed that place. They like, I don't know what the number is, I'd have to look it up, but it's like that place was packed. And at least the view of it made it seem like, oh my god, there had to be like 60, 70,000 people there. And then you place not even 2,000 people in this a venue that doesn't even seem like it has even the 16,000 it supposedly had. It's like, it's such a shrinkage of scale. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you look at the WrestleMania 1 at Madison Square Garden. And you had 2, which was at 3 individual locations, helped grow the scale. Then you had WrestleMania 3, where they were in the Pontiac Silverdome, brother. And they did over 80,000. And yeah, then with 4 and 5, it was at Trump Boo, Boo Arena. But the Trump Plaza Arena, which, yeah, smaller venue, but had such a unique look to it that sort of countered the reduction of scale with really them packing that arena and the wrestlers coming down the stairs and the ring being in the middle, allowing for maximum seating capacity. And then, like I said, WrestleMania 6, I think I said 5 earlier, but WrestleMania 6 happening in Toronto, where, you know, Edge and Christian watch Hulk Hogan face Ultimate Warrior. But I hope you can see what I'm getting to. It's like, it's just such a reduction, and that really hurts the feel overall of the WrestleMania. It's like, it feels like the WrestleMania is just so much smaller than the past 5. Or past 6, excuse me. I don't know why I have a problem with this numbering. I don't know why. But the past 6 seems so much bigger than this. And that hurt it. And then this reduction scale, I think, would continue happening all the way up till WrestleMania 13. In my fair opinion. So, with that, maybe we should get... I do want to make mention, being in LA, there are a lot of celebrities. Willie Nelson sings America Beautiful. By the way, the tagline is Stars and Stripes Forever. There's a huge patriotic theme throughout the event. They show George Steinbrenner in the crowd. Paul McGuire. Macaulay Culkin is seen at one point. Donald Trump is interviewed. God damn it. I'm sorry, I have to play this for the WWE.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong.
I feel much better now. No, it is actually very funny. They interviewed Donald Trump, followed by Lou Ferrigno, Chuck Norris, and Henry Winkler. To quote God, a.k.a. Mick Foley, why? Why? Let's get started. There is a dark match, believe it or not. I mean, there's 14 matches on this card. Apparently, with all the squash matches they put in this, they couldn't fit this one either, even though there's no time for it. But Coco Beware defeated the Brooklyn Brawler. Our first match of the evening is the Rockers, a.k.a. Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, facing off against the Barbarian and Haku of the Heenan family. This is actually a solid tag team match, pretty standard tag team fare. Rockers controlling most of it, then Barbarian and Haku get control, I believe is of Jannetty. Michaels gets a hot tag, and that ultimately leads to the win. So pretty standard on that standpoint. But here's the thing I think a lot of these matches are going to have is that they were good matches, they just weren't memorable. And I think that's ultimately another problem that this WrestleMania has, is that the matches we are going to see, at least the matches that were given time, aren't bad matches. They're just not memorable. Probably with the exception of the final match and the retirement match between Macho King and Warrior for obvious reasons, but still. Our next match is Texas Tornado versus Dino Bravo. This is a really short match, barely lasted 3 minutes. But still, decent enough. Not a squash, but not a complete squash. But Texas Tornado comes out on top. This is actually my surprise match, is the next match, which is British Bulldog versus the Warlord, but Slick. This was actually a great back-and-forth power contest. And I just love the build-up to the end, to building up to Warlord getting picked up and running power slammed by the British Bulldog for the 1-2-3. But I just love the psychology in this match and the back-and-forth with the power. So, British Bulldog versus Warlord was my surprise match, or at least is the match that surprised me the most here, as far as how good it was. Not great, but good. The next match is what would turn out to be the last match of the Hart Foundation, as they would split up and go on to be single competitors, or at least Brett would, as Jim would ultimately team up with Owen. But you had the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobs and Jerry Sags with Jimmy Hart, face the WWF Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation of Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart for the titles. Honestly, very good tag match. Again, stand fair with the faces, which is the Hart Foundation take control early on, but then the Nasty Boys get control, they grind them down. I think the Nasty Boys are very, very underrated as far as their style, as far as being a great tag team. Because I think they are, and I've met them, they're great guys. Honestly, they are. They are really into their character, and they're just like down and dirty, grungy. I mean, they are what their name says. They're a bunch of Nasty Boys. And again, just there's been nostalgic there, obviously. Watching them try to break down Brett. And of course, Neidhart gets the hot tag, but interference by Jimmy Hart gets them the title. Again, the issue here is not that the match was bad, because the match was actually pretty good. But when I sit there and think about it, there's really nothing memorable about the match. You know, and as we go through the matches, like, we do remember these matches, but we also don't remember these matches. And here's another one. Jake the Snake Roberts versus Rick Martel in what was a blindfold match. And the thing that came from this was, you know, Martel jumping Jake and spraying his perfume in his eyes, causing them to be dilated and diluted. And it's what led to, if you watch the 1990 Survivor Series, Jake had these very weird-looking eyes, and that's why. And he was kind of blind in one eye. And so that was the build-up to this. And, of course, build-up for many years, because Jake the Snake had been, I guess, hunting Rick Martel forever. I honestly like this match. A lot of people hate this match. I don't know why. I love the psychology of it. I love Jake trying to use the crowd that there was, you know, you want to see how great Jake the Snake was at Spring Psychology. I'll watch this match because it's a great example of how great he is at using it. And I thought overall his use of psychology, like I said, was wonderful. And I pretty much enjoyed the match because you're like just waiting for Jake to finally get his hands on Rick. And you know, as soon as he's done, he can hit that DDT and get the win. And sure enough, he does. And I just loved the build to it. I thought was pretty good. Speaking of legends, by the way, our next match is the very first match of The Undertaker with Paul Bearer as he faced Jimmy Snuka in a pretty much 4.5 minute squash match. And I'll say this, damn, Undertaker looked good. He put the one in 1-0. And there's really not much to say about that. Taker shows up, whoops Jimmy Snuka's ass, and leaves, pretty much. And that brings us to our sort of first main event. I guess you could say there's like four main events. Like if you look sort of the four biggest names, the Hart Foundation would be the biggest sort of tag name. Then you would say Savage and Warrior, Virgil and Ted DiBiase, that match, and then Hogan and Slaughter. Well, I'll sit here and say this. I enjoyed this match between Warrior and Savage much more than I did their 1992 SummerSlam match. There was a lot more energy back and forth. I do think it went on a bit much. In fact, I would say it went on far too long still. And I just don't know. I just don't. Ultimately, I didn't feel any investment in it. Maybe just because I'm not a Warrior fan. Maybe that's why. But at the same point in time, like, it just felt like no psychology. In particular, the ending to where Warrior hits like five or six like running shoulder blocks, and it just like this is the end, and it's. I was much more invested in the post-match festivities than the match festivities, which was, you know, of course, Queen Sherry blames Savage for losing and starts beating him, and Miss Elizabeth's in the crowd, and she jumps out of the crowd and starts beating on Sherry and saves Savage, which leads to Randy and Elizabeth getting back together, kayfabe, because they've always been married. I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't sit there and tell you a particular moment from the match that stood out. I mean, Savage looked good. He was fast and everything and wonderful. And Warrior, I just think it's hard because I kind of feel like my own bias for the Warrior is affecting the way I'm viewing this match. But at the same time, I've never been a fan of the Warrior. Yeah, he has a lot of energy, but, I mean, everybody knocks Hogan for, like, the same reason like how people knocked John Cena for his five moves, people knocked Hogan for his few moves, but Hogan really did a whole lot of moves, a whole lot more than Ultimate Warrior did. And so, yeah, he had all the energy and everything, but it's just, I honestly just can't remember anything other than a couple moments or, like, Savage hitting, like, I think maybe that's part of it is, like, I just don't believe in the whole Warrior kicking out after, I think it was, like, 5, possibly 6 elbow drops from the top rope. Like, it just, and it wasn't, like, oh my god, yeah, that would never happen. It's just, like, Warrior never sold me on his ability that he could kick out of that. I mean, let me put it this way. You know the anger a lot of you feel about Roman Reigns? Yeah, him kicking out of after those, like, 5 elbow drops is sort of that same thing. And it's like, the anger, like, this is bullshit, and we all know it. So, much better than our SummerSlam match? Yes. Still a bit too long. And for all the charisma Warrior has, Warrior lacks the subtlety to make me believe, honestly, in his heart, and I know people hate me to say that, but it's like, he lacked that connectability to make me believe in that. And here goes my childhood crumble up and dying. Our next match is a very interesting match as Jinichiro Teru and Koji Kitaro faced Demolition, Smash, and Crush with Mr. Fuji. This is part of a collaborative effort. I believe it was All Sports Japan Wrestling. I could be wrong. A Super World of Sports promotion over from Japan. And it was part of a co-promotion with WWF that also included two Tokyo Dome shows on March 30th and December 12th of 1991. This was a promotion that Teru, I think, had a major stakes in. Ultimately, honestly, this is just a fun little tag team match. They even go 5 minutes, by 4 minutes, 44 seconds. But ended with just a wicked-looking powerbomb, I want to say, from Teru. So that was... It was fine. I honestly don't know why. Again, I want to take the blame myself and say that this is personal bias to why I was more interested in this match, or at least more invested, than Warrior and Savage. But again, it's like I said, and I was invested in what happened after the match with Savage getting back together with Elizabeth. That was certainly a tearjerker. But as far as the match itself, it's just... It was just too vanilla. And I think that's the word I'm looking for. It's too vanilla of a match. Like, I wanted some more psychology. I wanted more out of these two huge powers. And Savage definitely was bringing it, but it's like, it just wasn't, for me, coming from Warrior. And for that reason, the next match is... I guess was a refreshment, or refreshing for me as far as actual wrestling happening. The next match also I very much enjoyed. You had the Big Boss Man versus Mr. Perfect for the WWF Intercontinental Championship with Bobby Heenan in his corner. Thing I need to make mention, while Bobby Heenan did do commentary, he had two matches where he was... He was a manager. One was the opening match where Hacksaw Jim Duggan came down and did color commentary. And then this match where Lord Alfred Hayes helped out. And you know what? This is a great back and forth contest between Mr. Perfect and Big Boss Man. The big highlight comes when Andre the Giant comes down to be in Boss Man's corner. And even though... The Heenan family gets themselves disqualified so that Mr. Perfect will retain the title. Andre helps Bossman chase them away. And Bossman, you know, Andre holds up Bossman's hand and they walk down the aisle. I think this was Andre's last appearance for the WWF. Unfortunately, before he would pass away very soon after this. And it was great, honestly, to see him on top of the Heenan family. Again, him, turning face. And I lost my place there. But to see him turn face after being a heel for the Heenan family was really great to see. We then have like a series of squash matches. The first one is Earthquake versus Greg Hammer Valentine, which is actually the longest of the three, which 3 minutes, 14 seconds, but Earthquake comes out on Greg the Hammer Valentine, which kind of makes me sad because Greg Valentine is a great wrestler and I think he deserves more than that. But I also think this is also at like towards the tail end of his career as well. But I still think it should have been more than just a squash to Earthquake. Then you had Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal defeat Power and Glory in less than a minute. Now, to be fair, they get jumped, they counter, and then immediately, I think they put Paul Roma into the setup and hit the Doomsday Device for the win. But yeah, a minute, it's like, this could have been a great match between two great tag teams. Because Power and Glory, Hercules and Paul Roma were a great tag team. They had that great finisher, which was Hercules with the vertical suplex and Romo with the crossbody. But they squashed it. And then, well, next is the Virgil versus DiBiase. After that, they have the Mountie versus Tino Santana, which goes a minute and a half and ends when the Mountie uses the cattle prod. All squash matches, and all of them could have been great matches if given the time. But back to, before we get to the main event, like I said, the match that happened in between the Legion of Doom Power and Glory match and the Mountie and Santana match was the Virgil versus Ted DiBiase match, which Virgil had Roddy Piper in his corner. And, you know, Roddy Piper trying to get Virgil to understand that he could fight for himself and everything. It was an okay match. Virgil starts off well, then DiBiase gets control, and it keeps going back and forth. And it, towards the end, that the match just felt like it went off the rails. And again, I just don't believe the count out for whatever reason. There's a nice moment after, but again, all that happens after Ted DiBiase beats the holy hell out of both Virgil and Piper. But then there's that great moment where they both get back up together. And it's nice, but it's like, yeah, but DiBiase just beat the holy hell out of you. Really? But anyways, that leaves us to our main event for the evening, as Sergeant Slaughter, the current WWF World Heavyweight Champion, with General Anon, defends the championship against Hulk Hogan. And you know what? I really enjoyed this match. Honestly, I was worried that, you know, because of the better wrestling I've seen after over 20 years at everything, and how sort of, well, the older style hasn't aged well in some aspects and everything, I thought my childhood might be ruined. But honestly, I mean, it wasn't the same as I remember when my childhood, but at the same time, I did enjoy it. The thing is, here's the difference between this and the Savage Warrior match. There's a lot more psychology in this match. I mean, like the Savage, I mean, here's another difference. Warrior and Savage didn't feel like the traditional face versus heel and like back and forth. Like, it went back and forth, but it never felt like back and forth. Here, there was a back and forth. And like, Hogan like beats the holy hell out of Slaughter until he makes the one mistake that allows Slaughter to take control, and Slaughter just wears him down and out until he makes the mistake of making Hogan bleed. That's when Hogan pops up, hulks up, fights back, and quickly thereafter gets to 1-2-3. It is very simple, but there's still, but I think what doesn't get a lot of credit is the psychology that Slaughter and Hogan put into it. One of them being, Slaughter is intentionally trying to get disqualified. And the referee's just letting it go because they know if they disqualify him, he keeps the title. And they don't want to give him what they want. So there's like it's this battle between what corporate and that stuff and Sergeant Slaughter, as far as he's intentionally trying to get disqualified. And Bobby the Brain Heenan makes a great point about it during that. Like, watch, he's trying to get himself disqualified. It's like also one of the few chances where you actually hear Bobby the Brain Heenan cheering for Hulk Hogan. Somewhat. He kind of goes back and forth, honestly. But there was great psychology at Hogan in the opening salvo. Had a lot of great psychology of, like, just beating the holy hell out of Sergeant Slaughter. And the other thing is just, there was a lot more connective energy with everything that was going on with the Gulf War and everything. And it just, this match felt a whole lot more fluid than Warrior and Savage. A lot of interlocking parts, a lot of build-up on things, a lot of great ring psychology by both wrestlers. And it still had that good, cheesy, hero-winning feel to it at the end. with Hogan getting doing the big leg drop and getting the 1-2-3, and winning the title back for the good US of A. So, you mean you combine that cheesy, good cheesy feeling with, I mean, that, like I said, the good cheesiness with actual great ring psychology, it's actually a really decent match. Just not memorable. And I think that leads to the final thing. You know, honestly, I usually do my top three moments, and I guess for me, Hogan winning the title was number one. Macho being with Elizabeth is number two. And Andre the Giant side by side with the Big Boss Man is number three. Actually, kind of tied with Jake the Snake getting his hands on Jimmy Snuka. And then you have Undertaker's debut. That was a moment, too. As far as my top three matches, Bulldog versus Warlord, number three. Jake the Snake versus Rick Martel is number two. And I'd put Hulk Hogan versus Slaughter, number one. But the thing about all of this is that a lot of the matches were good. I mean, there are squashes that are like really didn't need to be there, and certain matches that did have any energy. But for the most part, all the matches were really good. They just weren't memorable. And that's the thing. These matches were good, but they weren't great, and they weren't memorable. And again, it goes back to that. You know, you combine that with a smaller scaled arena. Smaller location, everything. And it's like, this WrestleMania felt like a disappointment. Even though it shouldn't have. It was a really good WrestleMania, but at the same time, felt like a disappointment. And again, it's like, once you reach the ceiling, there's no further way to go up. So everything else is going to feel like a disappointment. And you get that sort of feeling here. So at the end of the day, I give WrestleMania 7 a 3.5 out of 5. Really solid WrestleMania, but just nothing too memorable. There's a lot of things memorable, but it's the stuff that's memorable is stuff that happens after the match. So, 3.5 out of 5 for me. And that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if there's any emails or comments, you can send them to AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on Facebook by searching out the AppSolution Network. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom Tsunami D&D, the Intergalactic Graphic Review, Shintiger Crow and his anime and wrestling videos, and John Ramos and his Super Sentai videos. Make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site, and plus much more. And that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, March 9th episode of 1998 of Raw, but next we go and we look at the WrestleMania that where Stone Cold stepped out into the spotlight. I'm, of course, talking about WrestleMania 13. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, they bring me down to negative. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I'm still a moon to feed one baby that down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight, and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart, and all of my soul, and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but